Well, if you'll turn with me again to that passage in the second book of Kings, chapter 5. And tonight, really what I'd like us to do is just to have a look at this man, Naaman, and specifically at God's dealings with this man, Naaman. And we've got 4 points tonight, and the first point is this, that he was a rich, brave, powerful leper. Now, who did you want to be when you were a little kid? I once asked the son of a pastor, I asked him, what do you want to be when you grow up? Now, it wasn't Josh or Dan, just before anyone wonders. What do you want to be when you grow up? He replied, a cricketer or an assassin. Well, what did you want to be when you grew up? When you grow up, if you're still young, or when you were a kid, what did you want to be? Well, if you asked a little Syrian boy from the 8th century BC what they wanted to be when they grew up, almost undoubtedly they would say, I want to be a soldier. And I want to be a great soldier. In fact, I want to be like Naaman, the commander of the army. I want to be like him. And we're introduced to Naaman, aren't we, in verse 1. We read, now Naaman, commander of the army of the king of Syria, was a great and honourable man in the eyes of his master, because by him the Lord had given victory to Syria. He was also a mighty man of valour. What a description. This is the guy who's got it all, isn't he? He's a career soldier. And he's climbed the ladder. And having climbed the ladder, he's reached the top of the tree. He's now the commander of the king's army. And having climbed the ladder and reached the top of the tree, he hasn't found that he can't do the job. He hasn't got to that great position and thought, oh dear, you know, I've taken on too much. No, he's fantastic at his job. He's been a successful commander. We read, now Naaman, commander of the army of the king of Syria, was a great and honourable man in the eyes of his master. Why? Because by him the Lord had given victory to Syria. Well, when does a football manager find support from both the players, the fans, and the chairman? Well, it's when he's winning games, isn't it? Well, Naaman, he's not winning games. He's winning wars. And because of this, he's loved by the king. He was a great and honourable man in the eyes of his master. And not only is he loved by the king, but undoubtedly he's loved by his men. After all, if you were going to put your neck on the line, wouldn't you love a man who inspired confidence? Wouldn't you love a man who you could run into battle with, knowing that this is a man who's won many battles before? And of course, Naaman almost certainly was loved by the people. This was the successful commander of the army. He had gain territory for the Syrians. Everyone loves a winner. And of course his victories, they haven't been flukes. You know, he's not just got lucky. No, we read that he's brave, he's strong, he's courageous. He was also a mighty man of valour. So this is a great description, isn't it? He's brave, he's strong, he's valiant, he's won great victories, he's the commander, but not only that, he's rich. We see in verse 5 that when he goes to the land of Israel, what does he take with him? He takes 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10 outfits of luxurious clothing. Now, It's a little bit difficult to put that into today's money because the price of gold has skyrocketed. But if we just take that amount of gold and silver and nice outfits and put it into today's money, well, he took to the land of Israel around about £2.5 million. So this is a man who can lay his hand on a lot of money very quickly. So as we've seen Naaman, well, this is a guy who's got it all, isn't it? He's the poster boy of the Syrian army. He's loved by everyone. And he's loaded with cash. As we've been reading this opening verse, it's just got better and better and better, hasn't it? I suppose we could see this opening verse like a staircase. And every new revelation about Naaman is just getting better and better and better. Up and up and up. But at the top of our staircase, there's a sheer drop. And it brings us back down to earth with a thump. Because we read, "Now Naaman, commander of the army of the king of Syria, was a great and honorable man in the eyes of his master, because by him the Lord had given victory to Syria. He was also a mighty man of valor, but a leper." So if before we said Naaman had everything, well, now we might say he has everything, but actually he has nothing. For all his wealth, for all his power, for all his success, he's a leper. Now, what we know of leprosy today may not have been the same as what Naaman had. Leprosy in the Old Testament can refer to any kind of a skin disease. However, although we're not told exactly what this disease was, we can see that it was pretty serious. It was serious enough that in verse 3, Naaman found sympathy from a servant girl. She pitied him. It was serious enough that the king was willing to release Naaman from his duties to go and get healed. This disease was serious enough that Naaman was prepared to pay a lot of money in order to get healed. So we can assume that Naaman's skin disease, whatever it was, Naaman's leprosy, was at the severe end of the scale. Now, this wasn't simply a bad case of dandruff or a bit of dry skin. He's got a disease. He was a leper. And therefore, we can only imagine that he was reasonably repulsive to look at. If beauty is only skin deep, well, so is ugliness. Naaman's body, his hands, his face, his chest would have been covered with flaky, scabby, open sores, possibly oozing with pus. If you saw Naaman, you may well have shrunk in horror. His skin, to look at him, was repulsive. You know, we recently had experience of this in our house. For a few days, our house was infected because my son Oliver had chicken pox. Now, anyone with kids knows that kids are rank at the best of times. But kids with chicken pox is just on a whole new level. There he was. He began to get a temperature. And suddenly these little horrible spots appeared with little white bits on the end. And of course he was feeling very unwell. And what do kids do when they're feeling unwell? They want to cuddle. So Ollie came up to me, he said, "Daddy, I want to cuddle." I said, "Cuddle your mum. Don't come near me." He said, "No, Daddy, I want to cuddle." So what did I do? I wrapped him in a blanket. over his head, around his body, and I gave him a cuddle, and it was kind of at arm's length. And later on, he was feeling really unwell, and I forgot that he had chicken pox, and I said, there, son, put my hand on his head, rubbed my hand through his hair, and I felt all these lumps underneath the hair. It was disgusting. Oh. Well, that's just a taster, isn't it? Naaman's leprosy, far worse than Ollie's chicken pox. And it would have made his life a misery, wouldn't it? The assumption was and would have been that this disease was contagious. Now we know Naaman had a wife from verse 2. So he could never touch his wife for fear of her catching his leprosy. He couldn't sleep in the same bed. Possibly couldn't even be in the same room. If he had children, he couldn't give them a kiss or a cuddle good night. In fact, because of his leprosy, for all his importance, for all of his success, for everything he had, actually, he had nothing. His life was a misery. Well, how would we sum up Naaman's problem? Well, Naaman, of course, was a Gentile. He was a non-Jew. He was a Syrian. And therefore, he would never have read the law of Moses. But it's worth considering what the law says about those with leprosy. And we can sum it up in one word. He was unclean. This is what the book of Leviticus says. The person with such an infectious disease, i.e. leprosy, must wear torn clothes. Let his hair be unkempt. Cover the lower part of his face, and cry out, unclean, unclean. As long as he has the infection, he remains unclean. He must live alone. He must live outside the camp. So Naaman, this rich, powerful, successful commander, was a leper. He was unclean. So we come to our second point. Our second point is a proud commander, humbled. And we see that in verse 3, there is a ray of hope. An Israelite girl, stolen from her family, finds herself waiting on Naaman's wife. And what does she say? She says, if only my master were with the prophet who is in Samaria, for he would heal him of his leprosy. Well, this is all Naaman needs to hear. He's a desperate man. He's willing to try anything. And so he heads for Israel. And after a bit of a conversation with the king, he eventually arrives at Elisha's house. But he's not alone, is he? Verse 9. We read, and Naaman went with his horses and chariot, and stood at the door of Elisha. And we read verse 15. And he returned to the man of God, he and all his aides. Naaman comes with horses, riding on a chariot, with aides, quite probably soldiers. I mean, you wouldn't carry £2.5 million in cash around with you without some protection, would you? So Naaman turns up with a massive entourage. Everything about this man says that he's important. So how would you treat a man like this turning up at your home? An important man like this. Well, what would we do? We'd go to the door, we'd go out the door, we'd welcome them on the front garden, wouldn't we? And we'd invite them in, have a cup of tea. Of course, we'd use the best cups. But that's not Elijah's reaction, is it? Verse 10. And Elisha sent a messenger to him. Elisha didn't even grant Naaman the dignity of a personal greeting. Instead, he sends a messenger to him. A messenger who's not even important enough that we're told his name. And this messenger has one message. Go and wash in the Jordan 7 times and your flesh will be restored to you and you shall be clean. Now, why does Elisha treat Naaman in this way? Does he lack people skills? Is he just plain rude? Well, no. Elisha is making a point. Naaman is coming to the Lord for healing. He receives instructions from Elisha, but Elisha is only a man. He has no power in and of himself. His power comes from the Lord. So Naaman is coming to the Lord for healing. And the Lord wasn't concerned with his prestige or Naaman's position. The Lord wasn't concerned about his entourage. The Lord saw Naaman as he was, an unclean leper. And so Elisha treats him that way. And of course at this, Naaman is incensed. Verse 11, but Naaman became furious. How dare this two-bit prophet treat me like this? Doesn't he know who I am? He doesn't even come out and see me. He just sends this messenger. Indeed, I said to myself, he will surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God and wave his hand over the place and heal the leprosy. Naaman expected what any normal pagan Syrian would have expected. A religious magic show. A bit of smoke, a few magic words, and hey presto, Bob's your uncle, you're fixed, you're healed. Pay your money and go home. But there's a big problem with that, isn't there? In that scenario, Naaman doesn't need to interact with God at all. He's just got to stand there, say nothing, and let the prophet do his stuff. If it was the prophet who performed the healing, then Naaman didn't have to interact with God at all. Only the prophet did. But in Elisha's absence, Naaman will be forced to personally interact with God. He would be forced whether to obey or to reject the message that God has sent. And if he chooses to obey, if he chooses to follow God's word, then he himself will have to go to the River Jordan. He will have to undress. He will have to wash himself in the river 7 times. Without the prophet on the scene, with Elisha removed, there's no middleman. This would just be Naaman and the Lord. Healing wouldn't come by the hands of a prophet. It would come directly from the Lord himself to Naaman. But Naaman's not only angry at the way he's been treated. He's also angry about the humiliation of the task. He says, what he's asking me to do is ridiculous. Have you seen the River Jordan? It's dirty, it's muddy, it's smelly. He says, are not the Kabana and the Harpa, rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? Could not I wash in them and be clean? So he turned and went away in a rage. Naaman was angry because what he was being asked to do was humiliating. This great commander of the Syrian army, with all his entourage, with all his people with him, was being told to undress, to take off all those medals and that armour which showed how important he was. And to step down into a muddy river and have a bath. if he had to climb a mountain, or if he had to conquer some new territory, well, he would be praised for that, wouldn't he? He would have achieved something. He would have done something. But for this, he'll get no praise. All he'll get is humiliation. Because he'll be forced to strip down and be seen for what he is, a leper. And so both the way that Elisha treated him and the task that he was asked to perform, they both had a purpose, didn't they? They were to humble him. He couldn't come to God with the pretense of authority or the pretense of glory. If he was to be healed, then he had to admit what he was before God. An unclean leper. So this is the way that God had chosen that he would be healed. This is the way that he commanded that he should be healed. But of course, it's not actually described as a healing, is it? We're not told that the messenger said, go wash in the river so that you can be healed. No. He's told, go wash in the river so that you can be clean. The word clean, it appears 4 times in 5 verses between verse 10 and verse 14. As we said, Naaman was an unclean leper. And so he needs to be washed. He needs to be washed clean. And this can only happen by following God's word spoken by the prophet Elisha. And so, when his servants reason with him, he's convinced that it would be foolish to walk away. And so what do we read? Verse 14. So he went down and dipped 7 times in the Jordan, according to the saying of the man of God. So this important, powerful commander goes to the river. All those medals, all that armor, which showed he was important, were taken off. The chariot which spoke of his power, he had to step down from. And he had to stand on the bank of the Jordan, exposed for what he really was. An unclean leper. And yet, as he emerges from the water the 7th time, something amazing has happened. We read verse 14, and his flesh was restored like the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. Naaman's been healed. He's been cleaned. He's no longer a leper. And the healing which he receives in his skin doesn't simply bring his skin back to what it was before. No, it's better than it was before, isn't it? We read, his flesh was restored like the flesh of a child. As smooth as a baby's bottom, you might say. He was clean. He was fresh. His flesh had been restored. Naaman, the unclean leper, had been made clean. And so we come to our 3rd point. A new man on the outside and a new man on the inside. And it's not until this last section of our story that we begin to see that Naaman's healing wasn't only to his skin. More was going on than simply a healing of a physical skin disease. This proud Syrian commander, absorbed with his own self-importance, has been humbled before God. And only when he humbled himself before God could he be cleaned and healed. More's been washed away in the Jordan than his leprosy. Naaman's pride has been washed away. And Naaman's sin has been washed away because Naaman has been converted. And we can see that he got converted because he's been transformed. He's a new man. He's no longer proud. No, he's humble. The Naaman who visits Elisha's house the second time is very different from the Naaman who visits the second time. Look how he describes himself. Verses 15, 17 and 18. He describes himself to Elisha as your servant. In this short conversation between him and Elisha, he refers to himself as your servant five times. He's no longer full of his own self-importance. No, he's been humbled. He's now submissive. But not only is he now humble, but his attitude towards the Lord is different, isn't it? He doesn't any longer see the Lord, Yahweh, as one God amongst many. Oh, look what he says, verse 15. Indeed, now I know that there is no God in all the earth except in Israel. For your servant will neither offer burnt offering or sacrifice to other gods but the Lord. Naaman has come to realize that the Lord alone is God. And therefore his worship has been transferred from all those Syrian idols and all those Syrian false gods. And he says, now I will worship only the Lord. He's been changed. And we can see he's got a newfound tender conscience. He says, verse 18, that his position might raise a few difficulties. Part of his job as the commander of the Syrian army was to escort the king. And there would be times, therefore, when he would have to escort the king to the temple of Rimmon, the false god that the Syrians worshipped. And he says, at those times, when the king bows, holding his arm, I'm going to have to bow as well. So he says, please don't judge me harshly for this. This is part of my job. He asks if he can be excused for having to perform this formality. And he is excused. Elisha says to him, verse 19, go in peace. But what's interesting there is that we see in Naaman a newfound conscience. He doesn't want to sin. He doesn't want to worship a false god. He only wants to worship the Lord. This Naaman is a new man. He's been humbled. He's been cleaned. And now he only wants to worship the Lord. And so Naaman leaves. As a new man on the outside, yes. But a new man on the inside. He travelled to Israel as an unclean leper. But he leaves having been washed clean, having been healed, and having begun a relationship with the Lord. So that brings us to our final point. We have to ask the question at this point, don't we? What does Naaman's story have to say to us? Well, let's just think for a minute or two about leprosy. Let's think about leprosy, not on the outside, but leprosy on the inside. What is leprosy? Well, it's a deforming disease, isn't it? It's a disease which can make a person unclean. It's a disease which can make a beautiful person repulsive. Let's think of Kate, the Duchess of Cambridge, our future queen. Now, there is a woman who's prized for her beauty. But give her leprosy, and things would be very different. No longer would she be beautiful. No, she would be repulsive to look at. Well, Naaman's leprosy is actually a very appropriate metaphor for his real problem. His real problem is his sin. That was the reason that the Lord chose to bring Naaman to Israel. To deal with his leprosy, yes, but actually, more than that, to deal with his sin. And Naaman's problem is our problem as well. Sin, our disobedience to God, sin, like leprosy, makes a person unclean in God's sight. In fact, we may well say that it makes a person repulsive in God's sight. The prophet Habakkuk, when speaking about the Lord, or to the Lord, he says, "You are of purer eyes than to behold evil, and cannot look on wickedness." The Lord finds sin repulsive. We were created to be a reflection of what God is like. As the beginning of the Bible tells us, we were created in God's image. We were made to be a beautiful reflection of the God who has made us. But this beautiful reflection has been twisted. This beautiful image has been smashed and made ugly and repulsive and unclean by our sin. Think of how you would have looked at Naaman with his flaking skin and his oozing wounds. Well, you would have grimaced, wouldn't you, to look at Naaman? Well, how much more does a holy God grimace at the sight of sinful, unclean people? His beautiful creatures have been ruined by sin. So, friends here tonight, you and I, as sinners, having broken God's law, having failed to live as we should have lived, we are unclean before a clean and holy God. And sin, of course, it's not just the bad things we do, is it? Now, recently, my dad has had some heart trouble. He's had an irregular heartbeat. And therefore, at times he's been breathless. At times he's been weak. At times he's spent the whole day in bed because he just couldn't do anything. Well, what's the real problem with my dad? It's not the breathlessness, is it? It's not the weakness. No, it's the irregular heartbeat. That's the cause of the problem. The weakness, the breathlessness, they're just symptoms. Well, so too, the wrong things we do, the wrong things we say, the selfishness which stops us from doing good things that we know we should do, it's actually, they're just the symptoms of the underlying problem. That we've got a problem on the inside. We're sinners. You know, I met a lady in Bournemouth about 4 or 5 years ago, and I've said this before. She came up to me, she said, "I'm a drug user, but I'm also a drug dealer." She said to me, I've stabbed four people. And over the course of 5 minutes, she listed an incredible number of sinful things that she had done. And at the end of the conversation, she said, but you know, I've got a heart of gold. Well, who was she kidding? Of course she didn't have a heart of gold. She had done all these wrong things. Why? Because on the inside, she was a sinner. Sin is unclean. We are unclean in our sin. We even describe it like that, don't we? We talk about dirty jokes, filthy language. Why? Because sin is unclean. And in God's sight, before a holy, perfect, pure, clean God, we're unclean. So maybe here tonight you've got everything. You're like Naaman. Good family. Good job. Respected. Loved. A reasonably good person. You might have it all. But you're unclean in your sin. And with that uncleanness, we infect other people, don't we? In a sense, we're contagious. We leave behind us a trail of disaster, a trail of unkind, unthoughtful words, a trail of regret, shame, guilt, a trail of broken relationships and hurt and pain. Because in our uncleanness, in our sin, we infect others. And no amount of soap will make us clean. No matter what that soap may be. Maybe you think, go along to church. Do a bit of religion. Try and be a good person. Put a little bit of money in the charity box. Surely that will make me clean before God. Surely that will atone for some of the wrong that I've done. No, it won't. You're unclean in your sin. And so like Naaman, you need to be washed. As do I. As do we all. We need to be washed clean of our sin. But how can we be washed with? How can we wash clean? Well, firstly, like Naaman, we have to approach God in the right way, don't we? We can't come before God with our own self-righteousness. We can't come to God saying, look what I have done. So if I've done this, then can you forgive me for that? We don't come to God absorbed with our own self-importance. We need to come to the Lord admitting what we are. For all of our success, for all of our morals and our achievements, for all that we have and all that we own, we have to come to God admitting that we are simply unclean sinners. And that we cannot save ourselves. Naaman couldn't save himself, could he? That's why he travelled all that way to Israel. That's why he was willing to pay so much. Because he couldn't save himself. He couldn't deal with his leprosy himself. He had to come to the Lord to be cleaned, to be healed. Well, friends, you need to come to the Lord to be healed, but you need to come to him admitting what you are. You're a sinner. Now, I don't like saying that. It's not enjoyable. I don't say that just to make you feel bad. I've never read the book How to Win Friends and Influence People, but I imagine that most of what I've just said goes against the advice of that book. But nevertheless, it's true. It may not be palatable. It may not be what we want to hear. But it's true. We're unclean sinners and we can't save ourselves. And if we want to be clean, then we need to come to the Lord admitting what we are. But how do I get clean? Where do I wash? You know, Naaman, he had to go to the Jordan, didn't he? What, do we go down to the River Thames and have a dunk and come out clean? Well, no, of course not. If we have a spiritual problem, then we need a spiritual solution. We need a spiritual washing. This is how the Apostle John writes to Christians. He's speaking about Jesus, and he says this: to him who loved us and washed us from our sin in his own blood. Jesus Christ gave his life on a cross. And as he died on that cross, his blood was poured out. Well, why was Jesus there? Why was Jesus hanging nailed to a cross? He was there to receive the punishment that sinners deserve. He was there to receive the hell that sinners deserve. And on that cross, his Father poured out on him the punishment, the hell that unclean sinners deserve. And as the punishment was poured out on him, so his blood was poured out. And it's in his death, it's in his blood that we can be made clean. It's only because Christ has died in the place of sinners. It's only because he has received the punishment that sinners deserve that we can come to God asking for forgiveness and knowing that if we come to him, then we will receive forgiveness. Why? Because Jesus died for sinners. He poured out his blood so that we could be washed clean from our sin, so that all of our sin could be left at the cross. That trail of guilt and shame and regret, it could all be left at the cross. And having come to Jesus as a filthy sinner, as unclean, we can leave clean and transformed like Naaman, having begun a relationship with God. So friend, tonight, if you feel your sin, if you know that you're a sinner, and let's be honest, we don't have to look too far before we see our own faults and failings, do we? And if you feel unclean, you know, you put your head on the pillow at night and you try to get to sleep, but that guilty conscience, it just nags away. Those things that you've said, those things that you've done. And you wish you could go back and change them, but you know you can't. And you just constantly feel unclean and guilty and full of regret and shame. Well, friend, tonight, you can come to Jesus. And if you come to him being sorry for your sin, asking him to forgive you, then just like Naaman came out of the River Jordan a new man, so you can become a new person. You can be washed. All of that sin can be washed away. And you can have a relationship with a God who has made you. You can have peace. Because you're clean. Washed in the blood of Jesus Christ through his death on the cross. But you have to come to him, being sorry for your sin and asking him for forgiveness. But if you come to him tonight, he won't turn you away. He'll willingly accept you. He'll willingly forgive you. No matter what there may be in your past. No matter what those things may be that you don't want anyone else to know about. The shame, the regret, the guilt. No matter what, he'll forgive you. And he'll wash you. And you'll be clean if you come to him.